23 Skidoo, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that lost the coin toss. And now pining away for his misspent youth Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Oh boy, thank you so much. All that applause just gives me the vapors. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for the incredible audience reaction you've just shown me, and thank you especially to Drew McMillan. You have reached the Medicare with the Lazy Man, Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. This is where lazy people go to find out what they need to know about Medicare so they can deal with it and be finished with it, hopefully, once and for all. That's the way it usually works out anyway. That's our goal here, is to take the pain out of learning about Medicare. And in fact, to that end, we have a little 30-second musical spot with some factual information that I usually ask Randy to play about this time. Randy, please push that button.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
All righty. Thank you very much. That should explain to the audience exactly why we're here. And in fact, when I say we, I'm including Randy Carson, broadcast engineer and spiritual guru. How are you, Randy?
I'm doing exceptionally well today. I'm bright-eyed.
To hear that.
Yeah, I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I'm coffeed up. You know, I'm good to go. How about you?
Well, didn't we do a couple of episodes about being bushy-tailed, and did we decide that was maybe less than satisfactory? I don't know.
that's an old Midwestern expression. It's referring to squirrels, but you may not know that unless you're from Nebraska.
Well, I'm sort of down on wildlife lately, as I was talking to you about before you pushed the button, which started recording our podcast episode. As you know, my house has been for sale for almost 4 years, and we've added a little wildlife extra credit kind of thing that hopefully will attract some buyers. It is a deer in the yard. Not just any deer. This is a big, giant, dead deer. And I'm telling you right now, I've spent the morning trying to find somebody to haul it away before it starts to really stink the joint up. So that's kind of like the problems of living with Mother Nature. It's always fun until you got a dead animal on your hands. So that's one of my projects I'm working on right now. You got anything going on?
Well, I was just curious, Doug. This deer, did it like wander through the forest and, you know, it was wandering and wandering and finally dropped dead in your yard? Or was it somebody that escaped from a hunt?
I'm thinking it might have had a heart attack because we're in the middle of town, and I'm guessing this town is like 20 square miles. When you consider that Illinois is full of 6 square mile townships, I think this town is 6 by 6, 36 square mile township. So I think this town is about 20 square miles. We're right in the middle of it, and even though we've got 6 acres and a lot of woods, I don't think anybody's out there shooting at the deer. I think this thing just decided to drop dead. You know, it had a heart attack or something, which we don't think about animals doing that. They just, you know, die. But usually they go away where they don't bother anybody. And this one is laying right next to the driveway where any visitor is going to see it and eventually smell it.
Oh, my gosh.
Anybody that wants a picture of this thing, because I took a picture Sunday night, I will be happy to send the picture to you. Just write dbj@mlmmailbag.com, and I'll send you your very own picture of a dead deer laying in my yard.
Well, you know, I could tie that into why you don't want to buy a Medicare disadvantage plan, but I won't.
Well, why don't you? I mean, at least let's bring this back to Medicare instead.
Well,
of
he had. I heard this deer. I think his name was Bambi.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe Bambi's father. I'm not sure, but I heard that he had bought a Medicare disadvantage plan, and they said that Doug Jones was the guy in the neighborhood that was, you know, all about insurance. So he was trying to get to your front door to tell you that Medicare disadvantage plans, they were no good, and he couldn't get any health care, and he dropped dead on your driveway.
All right, I'm going to use that as an additional reason. Remember, the other day we had 17 reasons why you shouldn't buy a Medicare disadvantage plan. So I believe we now have 18 because it will kill you.
Yeah, it'll kill you, and it'll attract rotting wildlife.
Oh, boy. Jesus. Well, our new modus operandi is to get after it early in the episode. So rather than killing a lot of time, let us begin with this episode's Medicare content, shall we say. I am thinking that there are people occasionally who don't agree with the Medicare decision. And a while back, I don't remember what episode number it was, but Randy, you and I went through a study that was, it was a report written about the investigative efforts of the federal government searching for evidence of malfeasance in Medicare Advantage plans. And they seemed to find plenty of it. And what was happening with these Medicare Advantage plans was when people wanted permission to seek treatment from a specialist, or when they wanted permission to have a procedure performed that might have been a little out of the ordinary, and therefore a little more expensive, often these plans were trying to save money by denying permission. Most of the people then just went away and did not ever pursue an appeal. And the small percentage of people that did pursue an appeal, the plan approved. So why would they refuse permission and then later approve permission? Well, Randy and I think it might be because the plans, the people usually went away and never asked again. And God knows what kind of problems they had, whether they continued suffering in pain or whether they went to a doctor, got the same treatment they were going to have Medicare pay for, but they had to pay for it themselves. But these were mostly Medicare Advantage plans, or they were all Medicare Advantage plans that refused permission for paid treatment, at least initially. So it was interesting to me that a friend of mine had the same thing happen to him, only he was dealing with Medicare. He doesn't have a Medicare Advantage plan because he's a friend of mine, and I would not have let him go through life without a Medicare supplement plan. Medicare supplement plans will pay without any question their portion if Medicare pays. So my friend needed some surgery and he was denied benefits. The doctor that he went to, the surgeon that he went to, said, all right, we've had perfect candidates for this procedure at many times in the past, and there is no Medicare code. Medicare lives and dies by code. If you're going to treat a hangnail, you tell the Medicare people what the code is, and they'll send you a check for the Medicare-approved amount. But in this case, it was a much more complicated procedure. And so my friend paid for it out of his pocket, which was about $12,000, because he was in so much pain that he wanted to relieve the pain first and then settle the monetary portion of it after the fact. So he underwent the surgery, and the surgery was eminently successful, and he's very thankful to the doctors for allowing him to now walk around pain-free. And I'm thinking this surgery might have been a couple of years ago. So he embarked upon the process of appealing Medicare's decision not to pay for that procedure. And the reason they said they weren't going to pay for it was that they did not have proper code that covered that particular procedure, and almost as though it was experimental. So recently, my friend sent me a recording of his consultation with a judge an administrative law judge pertaining to his appeal. So let me back up a little bit. If you're going to go through an appeal and you're going to say to Medicare, I think you should pay for this, and Medicare is going to say, no, we're not going to pay for it. You say, why? And they say, well, we don't really have a code that covers that procedure. So it might be experimental, in which case we shouldn't be paying for it. Or it might not be effective. Any number of possible reasons. So my friend embarked on the 5 levels of appeal, the 5-step appeal process. Step one was the traditional Medicare administrative contractor. Medicare always has a company, generally an insurance company, that handles their claims, process the paperwork, sends the money out. And in this case, that would be step one of your appeal. Approach that company and say, I have a problem. Medicare turned me down for this procedure. I would like to have that decision reviewed. Now, if that goes against you, then step two is going to a qualified independent contractor who was not part of that original decision process. So that's number 2 out of 5 steps. And if that goes against you, number 3 is to present your case to an administrative law judge. And that's where my friend was when I listened to the interview that the judge held with him. It was a prearranged interview to be set, you know, like the 3 weeks in advance. The judge asked him for operative notes, the doctor's notes that were made during and after the surgical procedure, and he was ready to go. So at the appropriate time, my friend and the judge had a meeting together via phone. I don't know, I don't even think they were on Zoom or anything. I think it was all telephone. And I got to listen to my friend's recording. And I got to tell you, I was not impressed. And then my friend said he was not impressed because the judge did not seem to be very well prepared. But ultimately, after all the hemming, hawing, the clearing of throats, the asking of redundant questions, looking for papers and asking my friend whether they had been sent or not and being assured they had been sent, then the judge wrapped it up by saying he was going to look at all of what he had and send my friend a decision. Now, my friend then said, and the judge said, do you have anything else that you want to contribute to this? Any other factual information that might be pertinent to this situation? And my friend said, well, what might that be? In other words, how could I have prepared better for this? And the judge said, well, I had hoped for a statute, in other words, a citation of a statute or a law, or a citation from a Medicare procedural manual having to do with this kind of new and unusual surgical procedure. But my friend had not been warned. So that's something to think about. An administrative law judge who's going to be making a decision on your appeal is going to be operating just like all judges, hoping to follow a precedent that somebody else set so that he doesn't have to break new ground and then later defend his decision to break new ground. This judge was reluctant to give approval to this procedure because there was no code for it and therefore no precedent. Had other people gone through this surgery and been paid by Medicare, then that would be something to cite. So if you ever get involved in an appeal that Medicare has refused to pay you for something or pay for a service, and you want to appeal that, if it ever gets to an administrative law judge, be prepared for the fact that that judge is going to look for evidence of a precedent. And if you can find other cases that have ended in your favor with the same procedure, the same circumstances, then that's what these guys are looking for. And then your appeal will probably go much more smoothly. So after those 3 steps, if you don't satisfy the administrative law judge, then the other 2 steps that we have not addressed today are the Medicare Appeals Council and finally a federal court judge. And if you ever need to file an appeal and to pursue it that high, you can write to DBJ at Medicare. No, you can write to dbj@mlmmailbag.com, and I will be happy to tell you the steps, send you the instructions that others have written out so that you can pursue Medicare and try to squeeze the money that you think they owe you out of their tight little wallet. So, I don't know. So far, not a happy ending for my friend, but he hasn't heard the judge's decision yet. He may have to proceed on up the ladder, or he may actually get a compensation for the money he's paid out of pocket. I don't know which way it's going to go yet, Randy.
I've got a question.
Please ask.
I always have a question.
I know, and that's what I like about you. If you didn't have a question, we'd have to hire somebody with questions.
So,
and have them sit here.
As you were describing your friend's process of, you know, crawling his way up the chain, wouldn't it have been only reasonable for someone to have given your friend information about what that judge would have been looking for? I mean, your friend is not an attorney, is he?
My friend is not an attorney.
Okay, so he wouldn't be used to all of that. Oh, we need to find a precedent. We need to find this. We need to find that. We need to find citations. Don't you think it would have been reasonable for them to give him some guidance in terms of what the judge would be expecting?
All right. There's going to be a little subtraction from your paycheck this week, because what you've done is put me on the spot. I feel personally responsible for not helping my friend think through the process and therefore leaving him hanging out to dry when talking to this judge. And I apologize to my friend, you know, who is not here, so he can't yell at me. But more importantly, I can do some good by bringing to the table what I kind of remember from watching a million detective shows, especially when I was a kid. Black and white TV, three channels in Chicago. There were always detective shows on. And I know that judges are always looking for a reason not to have to go out on a limb.
Yes, and they hate setting precedent.
And I should have warned my friend that that might be a problem and that he should do everything he can. Now, I'm not sure my friend could have actually gotten more information than he had, because he was working with a staff of doctors at a pain clinic who had been down this road a bunch of times before. They warned him that he was probably not going to be reimbursed by Medicare for the expenditure, but yet they thought, okay, it's leaving the realm of experimental because they've done so many procedures. They were hopeful that Medicare now had seen enough of these things that they might assign a code that they could be used in the future. But they weren't able to say, okay, you're, you know, coming in at the right time. They were still able to say, you're going to have trouble getting reimbursed for this. Since they're not going to pay us, you got to pay us.
And I understand you're not an attorney, but are you allowed during this process to at least ask for the guidance of an attorney, or can you have an attorney present on the phone?
You know, that wasn't addressed. And once again, if anybody's concerned about this, I will forward written instructions, not by government officials. I'll send them what I have about how to file an appeal. I believe you're always allowed to ask the advice of an attorney, but I don't think you can have an attorney represent you. I think that law judge, that administrative law judge, wants to talk to you, the claimant, or your personal representative if you're, you know, like over around the bend or something.
That might be Here's my personal representative, my attorney.
That certainly could work. But often people have personal representatives that are like their kids or their adult children because they're getting nutty or they're easily confused. But the whole thing is, I should have prepared my friend for what the law judge might seek. And now I know for future incidents where I can advise people, but I did not know when he was going through this. So I feel kind of guilty about that.
So I've got I'm filled with questions now.
Okay.
Let's assume that your friend was prepared that he was going to have to find precedent upon citation and documentation thereof, because they won't listen to hearsay. Mm-hmm. How would he have done that anyway? It's not like he had any access to any of that.
Well, that's another question that I'm not prepared to answer, but I would suspect that there's a buried in libraries somewhere is some kind of a tome that determines what every Medicare code is. And if you found the right, you know, the dusty giant volume and you open that thing up and flip the pages to the proper code for the procedure that you had, then that might be all you need, because that indicates that somebody going before you has had Medicare deal with their medical procedure. Now, in the process of investigating and finding that code, you might be able to call Medicare and say, what's your reimbursement rate for this code? And then they would tell you, well, we'll reimburse 80% like everything else, or, you know, they might tell you something else. But I believe in this case, finding the proper code for the procedure was the key to the whole thing.
Okay, again, I'm full of questions here. But you've probably heard about what attorneys do when, you know, the judge is just hungry for evidence and precedents.
They make it up.
Well, there is that part. But I've seen cases where the evidence was delivered to the opposition in a U-Haul. You know, like pounds of pounds and pounds and pounds of paper during the discovery phase.
Well, reading my description, and my description of this process actually did not come from the Medicare.gov website. I looked there, and I do have their description of the process, but it was a much more user-friendly description from Medicare for Dummies. And this book has been, rewritten every year to comply with changing regulations, but they make it sound like it's a more user-friendly appeals process instead of one in which there are discovery phases, and a formal trial will have both sides seeing the evidence, and it's like warfare, and one side wins, one side loses often. In this case, what you're doing is you're going up against Medicare with a more user-friendly process during which you don't have to hire an attorney. I think step number 5 is where they suggest that you hire an attorney, because you're going to be dealing with a federal court judge. But in the step number 3, where my friend was, it was an informal meeting with an administrative law judge. Now, it was recorded, and he had various boilerplate things he had to say to maintain its official status as a part of the judicial process. But it wasn't the kind of thing where it was a courtroom meeting of two sides, with, you know, each side getting all of the evidence that the other side was ready to present. This was one judge trying to figure out what was going on and theoretically determining whether the bureaucracy of Medicare had made a mistake and whether the person in question should be reimbursed for the expenditure they had, or did they do something wrong.
Why is this not a case? Again, these kind of situations just boil my blood. Why is this not a case of the fox watching the hen house?
Well, speaking as a taxpayer who has to pay taxes, and then some of that money goes to support the Medicare program because it's a money loser every year, and it's a huge drain on the economy, I don't want to be giving away the farm. So I can see being a devil's advocate saying, I don't want these people being too free and generous with my money. I don't want them paying for procedures that are experimental. I don't want them paying for witch doctors that are dancing around a fire, rattling bones and throwing them on the ground. I don't want them to pay for things that are not effective, that haven't been proven effective. So those are some of the reasons that we might want to have this process in place, so that if Medicare says, no, we're not paying for that, there's every reason to believe that it's a well-thought-out decision. Now, your appeal may present evidence that things are changing and this procedure is no longer experimental, and it is proven to be effective, and that Medicare should change its view of it. But, you know, that's a process, and as time goes by, new things are invented, and they're experimental at first, and maybe they're effective, maybe they're not. But we don't want to just start paying for everything that everybody wants to do, because that's going to blow up the budget.
And your friend is just finishing out step 3?
Finishing step 3. He's waiting for the judge's adjudication.
Well, I'm very, very interested in this. And I'm hoping that you'll be able to keep us tuned in for step 4 and 5.
My friend will tell me every detail. And in fact, I have to tell you, listening to the recording the first time was fascinating, but I was sitting in a bar, an outdoor bar, because we're in Illinois after all, and I was maskless. And so there was a
being
lot of traffic.
Being eaten by mosquitoes?
No, no mosquitoes at all. It was wonderful from that regard, but I had to hold my phone to my ear and listen to everything. And believing the judge was clearing his throat and shuffling papers and asking questions, my friend was going, "Oh, I didn't know that question was coming. Let me ask it." And I already answered that, judge, but let me answer it again. So by the time the recording was finished, I thought, my God, I've got to listen to this again in the silence of my office. So it was an interesting but frustrating experience to listen to this recording. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast, because if you're prepared to do an appeal for Medicare, hopefully this will help you have your ducks in a row and it won't be as frustrating for you as it was for my friend.
Well, that certainly is good information, Doug, as you always bring great things to the table. And I'm sure that there's people out there listening right now that are either facing this process or are midst process somewhere.
Well, we know that there are a lot of people appealing things just from our reading of that study of the investigation of Medicare Advantage plans and how they some of those plans treat some of their members by turning down their requests for special procedures or special consultation.
Well, that's a whole different can of worms for me. Now those people are throwing bones on the floor out of a Campbell soup can.
Well, my goal would be to help those people gain courage to combat and approach them with an appeal, because as we saw, most of the appeals, I think it was 75% of the appeals that were filed, were either partially or 100% successful. So the point is, don't roll over and take the beating that they're going to give you when they say, no, we're not paying for that. Look at it through educated eyes and say, all right, is this a reasonable request? If so, I'm going to start the appeals process. Seems like a pain in the butt, but as we saw, it worked for most of the people in the Medicare Advantage plans.
Well, then I would describe that as just file the appeal, or not the appeal, but file the original claim as step one, and then just go right on into, whatever you have to do to appeal. Because, I think my memory serves me on this. It was well over, 90-some percent? There was a 92% in there someplace.
99%. I think it was 99% of the people just went away and never bothered to pursue
the
appeal.
That's right.
Of the 1% who appealed, 75% of those were successful to some degree.
So do you know, Doug, is there a multi-step appeal process in Medicare Disadvantage?
Yeah, it's a slightly different process because you're appealing to the insurance company rather than to Medicare. So it looks the same, but it's really, structurally it's a little bit different. But here's the thing. Let's not forget that the doctors told my friend up front, the procedure we're going to do is you're a good candidate for, and it's going to be very effective, but Medicare will not reimburse it because they don't have a code. So you're going to have to pay us up front for what we do. Otherwise, we're not going to do the procedure on you. So my friend was in so much pain, he said, all right, I will do that. Not everybody is willing to pay up front, hoping that the government sees the light and then reimburses them for the expense. My friend was able and willing.
But on the other hand, I'm standing on the side of your friend. But yes, on the other hand, and I know you are too, but on the other hand, his doctor didn't just dream this crap up on the spur of the moment either.
He wasn't the first guy to go through it.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be something documented in the medical journals where this has been a procedure. And the fact of the matter is that's probably where his physician got it.
I would like to think that it's all part of a rational process. Maybe I'm dreaming, but I'd like to think this is exactly what happens as society progresses. Here's a weird idea. Let's try it and see if it works. We were talking about an incident that occurred in Oregon on a beach, Randy and I were, before this podcast episode started. A giant whale beached itself And people said, well, geez, you know, that thing is really going to start stinking up the joint, and we've got a nice beach here. Let's remove the whale. And what was the massive, excellent idea they came up with to remove the whale, Randy?
They packed it full of dynamite, and then they announced, I think it was in Oregon, it was a beach town, obviously. They announced when they were going to blow the whale up, and that attracted many, many, many onlookers to come see the whale get blown up. And when I think it was even to the point where the mayor of the town was the one that was going to hit the switch or something. I mean, it was darn near that way. So he hit, you know, they had a big countdown, hit the switch, and it all was going well until the dynamite hit the whale, and this 200-ton whale blew into 60 to 70 to 120-pound chunks of rotted blubber and flew about a half a mile off the beach and rained down on people's cars and smashed them.
Well, let's say that that was equivalent to a new medical procedure that had great promise for mankind. In other words, if you've got pain, this procedure just may cure it. But let's try it a few times and see if it's worthwhile.
So I'm pretty sure, Doug, that was the last time in the, you know, the history of the world that anybody tried blowing up a whale.
Yes, but fortunately for my friend's level of pain in his eventual recovery, they persisted with this procedure that was performed on him and managed to make it work. So now it's up to medical science, or the powers that be, to accept it as a rational choice and under certain circumstances, and it has value, and it should have a code so that Medicare reimburses the doctors who perform that procedure.
So I've got another question, and we've used up our gas here, but I'll save that for another one. But the hanging chad is for the Medicare stump, the Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Oh boy, that always sounds worse than it is.
Is under what process, if there is a process, does a procedure that was once considered to be experimental become approved and on the book of code? We'll leave that as a hanging chad.
All right, let's do. Maybe we'll address that when my friend's appeals process comes to a successful conclusion and he gets all his money back.
You know, this has been a great and interesting episode. I'm can't wait to hear chapter two of this. But in the meantime, we better tell our listeners, thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy. And don't forget to go to Amazon.com, buy his book, several of them, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020, 21 to come out, you know, this fall. Or the audio edition, you can listen to it on the way to work, or you can go to Barnes & Noble and pick up a copy also. Doug, do you have anything to finish off with?
I just want to say thank you for listening. Buy the books, like Randy said, and we'll see you next time.